Blog Talk Radio.
LifeQuest Christian Network.
Welcome to Reflecting His Gifts. I'm Sissy Ellison, your host, and I believe that every person has a God-given purpose, a gift or a talent, a testimony that is meant to impact this world for the good and bring glory and honor to God. I believe as Romans 8:28 tells us that all things, even the bad stuff, work together for the good of those who've been called according to God's purpose. God is famous for making lemonade out of lemons, giving hope to the hopeless, using the foolish to confound the wise, and even using our worst trials and losses to make us stronger, to teach us important lessons, to equip and gift us, and then to use us as we comfort and help others. Tonight we're going to talk about a favorite subject of mine, kindness and compassion. I'm a great believer in the enormous power of kindness and compassion to positively change and heal lives, hearts, and the world that we live in. Whether our words and actions are hateful or kind, those gestures have the power to greatly affect those around us. Hatred, selfishness, and anger can build walls within families, in between individuals, groups, and even countries. Kindness, love, compassion, and forgiveness can tear those walls down and bring healing, comfort, and reconciliation. Kindness and compassion are powerful in their ability to melt and move the hardest, most broken hearts. A smile, a kind word, or a gentle hand on someone's shoulder can literally change someone's world. As small as those gestures may seem, they can turn another person's bleak and hopeless existence into a light-filled place of hope. If there's anything we need more of in this world today, it is compassion. Hatred has...
Okay, it looks like Sissy's call has dropped. This is Alexandra Clare, and we're talking to John Starley Allen until Sissy comes back on the air. And John has written a very exciting book. It's not his first book, but John, do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. Years ago, we were living in a small town called Moab, Utah, and I was there to do a writing project, and it just required that I was in the town. We couldn't really do it by computer. We had to be in the same room and kind of brainstorm, and we were working on all things. It was a translation course in Japanese about technical writing. That's what we were doing in Moab. And we got to know these two brothers that were just fantastic kids. And one day we were at church, and we heard that there had been an accident where these four of these kids, they were on their way to see another church, and their car, it was just like 3 weeks before Christmas, they hit an icy patch.
Oh,
their
dear.
Car ended up going into the Colorado River. And the first thing we
goodness.
Heard is, it's like, it doesn't look good. And then they said, you know, not everybody made it. And then they said, you know what, none of them made it.
Oh,
and I just,
gosh.
And I'm just like, you know, how could... And I thought, my heart really went out to the mom and dad. I just thought, how can you lose, you know, not just one, but two children, and how could you deal with that?
Mm-hmm.
And I just remember going over to, my wife and I went over to visit the mom and dad, and I didn't really have anything to say, because my words just failed me. All I could do was just give the dad a bear hug and just, you know, just tell him how sorry I was about the news. Went over that thought, like, and then finally, I ended up writing. When I finally came to grips with it, I wrote Christmas Gifts, Christmas Voices. And
I love that title. You mentioned that earlier, and I love that title. Sissy, you're back on with us.
I don't know what happened. I have a new phone,
yeah.
And I'm afraid it did something crazy.
That's
so
okay.
Sorry.
That's no problem. John and I have been talking, and he's been telling me about his book. So go ahead, John.
I wrote a little afterward. I explained how the work was a work of fiction, but it's based on this incident that happened in Moab. And sometimes I think, okay, I went to Moab to work on a writing project. It's like, not really. I went there and I experienced that whole tragedy. A book came from that, and hopefully that book's inspired other people. And so kind of like Sissy says, you know, there's no real accident. Things happen for a reason. And my wife and I, we talked about, well, why did we go down there? It's like, yeah, I think we know why. And so that was about the ripple effect, and how this man, after he experienced that loss, he then took it upon himself just to do these acts of kindness. And then like 20 years go by, and then he finds out the great results of his acts of kindness. And in the afterward, I talk about this ripple effect that we all have. And now this book that I've just written, this is several years later, it's about the ripple effect. And I loved Sissy's introduction. I would just like a kind look, a kind word. It can have enormous consequences in people's lives. We never know most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what these stories, they just build on that, how people have just shown kindness to other people and the great results that follow. That in a nutshell, mm-hmm. that's basically it.
Right. Well, I'm going to mute my mic and let Sissy take over, but I just want to comment that I've known Sissy for a lot of years, and she has the gift of mercy. Mercy is absolutely one of her spiritual gifts, and she started a ministry at one time working with prostitutes, and I'm talking about street prostitutes at the end of their lives. And Sissy used that gift of mercy in a powerful, powerful way to see many people come to the Lord. So, Sissy, you go ahead and take over. I just wanted to mention that about you because I love that quality in you.
Well, you know, and that's a God-given gift, and I'm very grateful for it. We have the choice to allow God to use that gift in us, which sometimes causes us to feel a lot of other people's pain. I cry a lot, you know, and I feel other people's pain very, very deeply. So we have a choice, I think, when God gives us that gift to really accept it and to use it the way that He would have us use it, and to not close it up or to close it up and become hard-hearted. So the alternative for me has never been acceptable. If I have to cry a lot and feel other pain, and you know, I choose that over the alternative. Don't you, John?
Yeah, well, I think this, I can just imagine how heartbreaking and gut-wrenching it would be to work with the individuals you worked with that had such a hard life. And I think a lot of times people build this wall up. It's like, okay, I don't want to become involved because it's too heartbreaking. And then there are people like you. It's like, yes, it's heartbreaking. They need help. I'm going to reach out and do what I can do to help them.
Right, right. And it can change a life. It can literally change a life. And you don't know what that hand on the shoulder or that kind word or that moment of listening or the tear in your eye might do to melt someone else's pain away and give them encouragement and hope. Well, John, you write about kindness and compassion, and I believe those are spiritual gifts and that God gives those gifts to us to use for His glory and His purpose. And often our God-given purpose and a glimpse of those gifts are revealed in our early childhood through the things we love to do and the ways we interact with others. I was a kind child. I got off on the wrong path for a while, but I was a very kind child and always, you know, trying to help other children. But God wastes no portion of our lives. So tonight, why don't we begin with your early life? Will you share with our listeners a glimpse of your childhood?
Sure. I lived, we had kind of a small family. It was a single parent home with my mom. I had an older brother, just myself. Mm-hmm. And we lived with my grandfather, my mother's father. And he had lived a very active, full life, and he was into his 80s. He was becoming senile, with Alzheimer's, and a little bit of dementia. And I didn't quite fully understand it at the time, but I did know he was had a lot of challenges, and my mom was very patient and kind with him. And I really was impressed how just she had a lot of patience, and she would if he would get upset, she would try to calm him down, and you could tell there was a real bond. And then later she would tell me stories of just how kind he was to her in her life, and so now she had a chance to. And he was always of service. He was a doctor, and his whole life was basically built on service to other people. Mm-hmm. And now this was her turn to show service to him. And just a side note, I had the great opportunity to do that with my own, excuse me, with my own mom because she had the same thing. And, boy, it's really tough. But I was kind of grateful for it because I thought, you know, my mom's been great to me. Now she's going through a hard time. And, you know, I am grateful for it, as hard as it was.
Yeah.
But, when my grandfather passed away, my mom was talking, she was by his bedside, and she said the last words he had were, "The happiest people in this world are those who live the gospel of Jesus Christ."
Yeah.
Now, that was pretty profound, you know. And I'm kind of like you. I mean, he said you sort of got off track. Well, I think everybody does. I get kind of pulled off by either friends, pressures of the world, and that happened with me, and yet my mom was always there to kind of pull me in, and because of her, you know, I know I could have gone two different directions, but she never gave up on me, and so it's a combination of people like my mom, other relatives, teachers, and just neighbors that would just do those kind things at the right time, so I never got too far off. And if people saw me getting off the track, they would kind of pull me in. So
yeah, those people have great power to influence our lives. And you sound like me. I never forgot those really kind people. And I had a mom like you who was extremely kind and always doing something for someone else. She would cry easily. She would laugh easily. She hugged easily. She was very affectionate. And I think children learn from example. I really do. And sounds like you learned from example as well, and your grandfather and your mom. And now I look at my own children, and one of the things I prayed for them all their lives, John, was not for great success and prosperity and things like that, material things, but I've always prayed especially for God to help them to be kind. Because I think that's so important, because kindness can carry you very far. It can cushion you. If you're resilient and kind, you don't break easily. You forgive easily. Things don't bother you quite as much, and you allow for other people's discrepancies or the ways they act. And so I think kindness is one of the best things that we can teach our children, don't you?
Oh, definitely. I mean, when you were saying that, I was thinking, I had a friend whose father was a brilliant man, and he did a few inventions, and he became very, very wealthy. Mm-hmm. And yet, he was one of the saddest people I knew because he didn't have that kindness factor. He was focused so much on himself that he ended up losing his family.
Wow.
He ended up getting divorced. All of this, he had plenty of money. And that really had an impact on me. I thought, you know, you can have all the money that you need and still, he was just sort of a crushed man. And the last time I saw him, I just thought, boy, it's the kindness factor. If you had just had more of that, you'd be in a lot better place.
You are so right. You're so right. I understand that you liked to write, John, even as a child. So I think that was a gift that was revealed early on in your life. I believe that was definitely an indication of who you would become later and what you'd be doing. Tell us about your early writings. What did you write about?
Well, the school that I went to was down the street. And I think I would, I'd walk down the street to the little school that I went to. And then when I would come home, I had these stories that my mom called the road stories, because each one, it started out, I was walking down a road. And after that, it would be like, you know, I ran into a cat, or I saw somebody robbing a bank, or, you know, just any. But it always started with,
I was
walking
down. I hope you didn't see that. Did you really see that?
So I loved to write. And when I was still young, my mom was in a garden club, and they're doing a civic beautification. And there's a town in Utah called Murray. And she said, we need a slogan for this cleanup effort. Do you have any ideas? And I go, yeah, maybe like if you rhymed it. So it was very simple. But it was like, hurry, clean up, hurry.
Yeah.
And then that was on a billboard. That was like one of my first, it got
put
on a billboard. Hurry, clean up, hurry.
That was encouraging to you, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I know, John, that your faith in Jesus Christ is a mainstay in your life, and the theme of faith in Jesus is revealed in much of your songwriting and other writing. How did you come to know Jesus Christ and experience salvation?
You know, so I came from a family where, you know, there's definitely a lot of faith. My grandfather and my mom and other relatives. And so, you know, that helped me and that was sort of an anchor and a center in my life. And yet, when I was like 18, I thought, okay, that's all well and good.
Mm-hmm.
But now, at this point in my life, I have got to somehow get my own testimony.
Right.
And there, you know, and there's this formula, and I thought I'll just follow, you know, it's a very simple formula, but you have to do it, I think. I just started, you know, reading more of the scriptures and
yeah.
then pondering, and I'd ponder
yeah.
what I'd read, and then I would pray and just say, you know, if this is true, let me know.
Yeah.
And in my case, it wasn't anything really dramatic, but over a period of time, I would sort of just get kind of a warm feeling in my heart, like, yeah, what you're reading, it's true, and just continue
mm-hmm.
to have faith. And that's, so I mean, it's like I just built upon my grandfather, my mom, but then I thought
mm-hmm.
I've got to go out and get my own testimony. And that's sort of how
right.
it worked with me.
Well, you're describing scripture, faith grows by hearing the word. And the more you read the word and ponder it and think about it, the more Christ grows in reality to you. It's just like it comes alive the more you read it, don't you think?
That is so true, definitely. And it's there. It's there for everybody, you know. And just if they would just take the time, you know, maybe a couple minutes out of every day, just, or, you know, and some people, I know some people, it's like I spent the whole night reading the scriptures, and in the morning I knew it was true. So and that's another way to do it. But
mm-hmm.
it's there for us to do it.
Right. And sometimes, you know, sometimes it gets kind of, I don't know. I never read my Bible before I go to bed at night because I'll go to sleep. And sometimes when I read something, it will be kind of flat to me. And so I found that in those times when I can't grasp that igniting experience of the Word, sometimes I just sit in prayer, John, and I will recite what I know about the story of God and creation and the prophets and Jesus back to him. And by the time I finish my prayer time like that, it's like a child reciting the story of God to a father, you know, like a child would be telling their parent. And by the time I finish it, it sounds childlike, but by the time I finish it, my heart is just on fire. I mean, and Christ is so alive after those times. So I would suggest that when we can't read the word and get a lot out of it, just sit and tell God all you know about the story of his love for us.
That I can relate to that because, you know, if you read the New Testament and it just flows like honey. And then for me, I might read like Isaiah. I'm like, I'm not quite getting this, you know.
Yeah.
And so then I'll think about the scriptures that I do understand.
Right. Sometimes you just have to stop trying so hard. And that's when
yeah.
I hit on that idea. Well, I'm just going to sit and tell God what I do understand, just like a child telling their father what they do understand. And in my heart, it never fails by the end of it. I'm crying tears and feeling very, very much affection for my Heavenly Father. So, but anyway, do you have a career besides writing, John, a job you go to each day? And why don't you tell us about that?
Sure. You know, I actually have two other jobs that keep me busy, but they both involve writing. And one
mm-hmm.
is technical writing. And it's, you know, that's about as far from inspirational writing as you can get. You know, it's pretty dry and precise and everything. But I do that. And I will rewrite Japanese translations that are instructions.
Mm-hmm.
I try to just get them in a format that's a little more more like easier to understand sometimes. And so I do a lot of that. And then the other one that I do is promotional writing, like advertising copy.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes in advertising, I'm able to actually use both my talents of music and writing because I will write like a musical jingle for television.
Mm-hmm.
And some of my best-known music is like maybe like for a mattress factory, a hot chocolate company, you know.
Wow.
But and then the people will hear that, and then I might say, well, what, this other song over here? Never heard it. But, well, did you ever hear this hot chocolate? Oh, yes. But I enjoy it. But I really, my first love is to write inspirational writing. And it's just because there's no lack of, like, negative writing, correct?
Right,
and
right.
So I just think, okay, I could spend my time writing, you know, secular writing and stuff. But I thought, but you know, we just need more positive writing. And that's, so if I have the time to write something that I want to write, I want it to, at least for me, to be something that would be uplifting for other people.
Right. Well, you know what? I'm a writer too, and I write music, and I write devotionals and lots of things. But I have a day job too. And sometimes, you know, I think people like us would give anything just to be able to do what we love to do all the time. And
definitely,
just be able to sleep late and then write all day or practice our music all day. But it's never been like that for me. I've been a single grandmother raising a grandson most of my past 20 years almost. But every day I go to another job that's filled with technology and lots of other things. And at first I used to ask God, ooh, Lord, why have you put me there? I don't understand. I'm so creative. I'm so passionate about writing and singing and all these things. But as the years have gone on, and this might be true for you, I've seen how God has taught me so many things in this day job that produce results in my writing, lessons that I learn, wisdom that I gain, confidence that I gain, abilities that I've gained, bad days that I've had on the job that turned into a song or a story, you know, and difficulties with a coworker that turned into a lesson teaching me how to forgive and how to be tolerant. And do you find that too, that as you go to your day job every day, sometimes the things you experience might trickle over into your writing as well?
Oh, sure. I definitely do. And the thing is, too, I mean, well, I remember I had a friend who was not active in church for many, many years. And then he started to get active. And he said, but you know what? How am I going to keep the Sabbath day holy? Because that's sort of the day that I do all my chores and everything. And I said, I don't know if that's going to work. But he said, I'll give it a try. And then he told me, he said, okay, I started keeping the Sabbath day holy and just focusing on going to church and pondering the scriptures, things like that. And you know what? I was blessed in my life that on Saturday, I got done what used to take me Saturday and Sunday. I was just, my time sort of freed up somehow. And I also think, you know, people like you and I, it's like we have these other responsibilities we have to do. But I think if we're faithful in doing that, then whatever time we have to write, I do think that we can be blessed and like, oh, I got a lot done in the limited time that I have, you know.
It teaches you patience and discipline, too. And then you so appreciate those times that you can sit down to play the piano or sing a song or write a story. It's just like a gift, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. It sure
is. Yeah. Well, I know family is very important to you. John, tell us about your lovely wife, Joanne, and your daughters.
Yes, I have to tell you, I'm kind of outnumbered here because I have four daughters, one wife, and there's me. But, you know, there's a couple of things that have happened in my life concerning my family that have really just increased my faith. And my oldest daughter, when she was in junior high, she became very ill, and we took her to several doctors, and we weren't quite sure what was going on with her, but she lacked a lot of energy, and we had to pull her out of school, and she had like a tutor that would help her. And then finally, we talked to a particular doctor, and he said, you know, she has autoimmune disease, and, you know, it might just have to run its course. We're not sure. For a long time, they thought she might have like MS or something like this. And so, you know, obviously, we're very worried, but we just thought, well, we don't know what's in store in the future. But and finally, when she was in her second year of high school, she's able to start going back to school. And then we met with her counselor, just like, and we're thinking, okay, so she's going to graduate from high school, and then we'll see what college she wants to go to. And he looks at us, and he says, you know, she will graduate from high school but she's not qualified to go to college. And we're like, really? And he says, no, but that's okay. There's other things for her. And, you know, my wife and I, we just thought, we didn't accept it. But no, there's something more for her. And what happened was, you know, she did graduate from high school, but then we enrolled her in like, the community college. And we thought, okay, she needs these credits. And my daughter did everything that was expected of her. And mm-hmm. then she did get accepted into a very good university.
Wow, that's great.
And, you know, she went to 4 years, and she became a school teacher, and she recently just got her master's. And I think back to that counselor, it's like, you know, I know where you were coming from, but we thought there's more, there is something for her. And she loves teaching, and she works with those that are have, like, special needs, like with Down uh-huh. syndrome, things like that, and she really loves it. But
That's awesome.
There's that. And I don't know if you've heard, there's a kind of famous person from my town of Salt Lake City. His name's John Huntsman. Mm-hmm. He's very wealthy. He has a lot of businesses. And his mom died of cancer. And that really affected his life. And then he developed cancer. And then with all his money, he thought, I'm going to start a cancer institute. It's called the John Huntsman Cancer Institute. And little did I know that we'd become really well acquainted with it, because then my wife developed cancer, she ended up going there. And you can just imagine, it was like stage four, and they would say, like, I think maybe we got it in time, but it's a little iffy. And so we're like, you know, again, there's just a time for prayer and everything. And I remember my wife was in with a doctor. And this building is right on top of a mountain, and you can look over the whole Salt Lake Valley. And I remember the very spot I was in. I was just looking out on the Salt Lake Valley, and I wasn't specifically in prayer, but I was very concerned. Yeah. And right then, a feeling came over me, and I couldn't deny it. It says, you know, your wife, she's going to survive this. It's going to be really hard. It won't be easy, but she will prevail, and she's going to climb to the top of the mountain and conquer cancer. And when I had that, and I believed in that feeling, I was very merciful that I could get that feeling, because it helped me out a lot. And then when things looked tough, I thought, no, I had that assurance that she was going to be okay. And, you know, she's been in remission now for like 5 years. And but so, you know, those are some of the stories that have really helped me with my family. I just get a lot of strength from my family.
That's so awesome. That's so awesome. I'm so glad she's all right now. Yeah. John, we're going to pause for just a few moments to hear a word from our sponsor about the exciting What's In series by gifted author Alexandra Clare. Stay tuned, and we'll be right back.
Okay.
The What's In series by Alexandra Clare. When Andrea is framed for murder, she discovers that divorce cannot sever the ties from a dangerous cult. Follow Boston Police Detective Jared Scheel as he sets out to solve a murder and kidnapping, only to confront a vast conspiracy competing to produce the last Antichrist of world history. Against the backdrop of drama and intrigue, the Woods End characters come to see that demons are on their last assignments. Bible prophecy unfolds in real time, and Jesus Christ is at the door. Two books, Woods End and the thrilling sequel, The Year Between the Wood. Download from Kindle, Nook, Screwpulp.com, or purchase the softcover at Amazon. Also by Alexandra Clare, a work of nonfiction, discerning spirits, visionary gifts, and practice. Find it all at alexandraclare.com.
LifeQuest Christian Network.
Welcome back to Reflecting His Gifts. We're talking tonight with author John Starley Allen. John wrote a book called A Splash of Kindness, and kindness is something I love to talk about. I believe that kindness is one of the most important gestures that we can offer to others in this earth. I understand, John, I know you and Alex at the beginning of the show were talking about Christmas gifts, Christmas voices. I had a little outage at that point, and I didn't get to hear. I understand that some of the people in your town inspired your writing. One of your first books, Christmas Gifts, Christmas Voices, was inspired by a tragedy that occurred in your town. Will you tell us about that experience and how it affected you and why you wrote the book?
Sure. I mean, this was we've lived in Nashville and Salt Lake City, but my brother said there was an opportunity to work with my brother and a team of writers in the town of Moab, Utah, which is a fairly small community. But we just had to be in the same room to kind of brainstorm. We were working on a technical writing course and aimed at Japanese writers. And so it was, you know, again, about as far removed as inspirational writing as you can get. But little did I know that my heart would be really touched when there was four teenagers there on their way to a church meeting to sing as a quartet, and their car hit an icy patch just a little bit, about 3 weeks before Christmas, and they were all lost. And I remember I knew the mom and dad, and I just thought, you know, I put myself in that situation. I thought, I can go through health problems, financial problems, but losing not just one, but like two of your children, I thought, there is no way I could deal with that. And I was naive enough to, well, you know, maybe you can like make a bargain with God. It's like, I'll do anything you want. I just don't want to ever go through this. And then I thought, you can't do that. You have to live by faith, and you don't know what's going to happen. Yes. But I kept pondering that. And finally, by the time Christmas rolled around, I did have the beginning of a story. And like I said, it was based on this. That's what triggered me to write it. And then I sort of developed a little bit more, and I had the character, he actually lost his wife and two children. And then during the Christmas season, he sort of lost himself in thinking of others, and that helped him cope with things.
Yes.
And then at the end of the book, he sees the ripple effect of the acts of kindness that he's forgotten about, and people began to talk about what he had done and the great consequences, the very positive results. And so in that book, I do afterward, I talk about how there is a ripple effect, and I talk about I lived in Nashville, I came back to Utah, and then went back to Nashville for a little visit, and I was just walking down the streets of Nashville, and hey, John Allen, I turn around, and I said, oh, this is a person I knew when I lived in Nashville. And he went on to say, he said, well, did you know you've changed my life? And I'm like, I was like, really? I mean, I'm sorry, I don't remember anything of that effect. And he went on to just talk about, I apparently had done, and said, just kind of like you were saying earlier, just very, to me, very inconsequential, but it was just the right thing at the right time. I didn't know that. And he said, yeah, that really turned my life around. And I just want to thank you. I'm like, wow, there's a real power to this ripple effect. And so I have been thinking about this for several years. And there's a lot of historical stories. And there's some like contemporary stories and my own personal stories. And so there's 12 different stories. And they all talk about the ripple effect. And before the ripple, there is that splash. So I talk about, you know, the initial, you know, splash, if you will, that caused the ripple effect.
Absolutely. So that book began your inspiration, and then you went on to write A Splash of Kindness. And I, like you, believe that our actions, good or bad, have great power to affect other lives, and you call that the ripple effect. Tell us about the ripple effect of kindness and compassion and how it can change lives.
Well, I think about another part of the ripple effect, I think, is listening to an inner voice, maybe inspiration or intuition. And I this one story where there's a woman whose family is kind of entrapped or enslaved in the system of sharecropping. Mm-hmm. And it was in Alabama, and they lived in extreme poverty. They picked cotton all day. They didn't get a lot of money for it. And one day she announced to her family, said, this very rural area, said, we're moving up north to Cleveland, Ohio. And it could have been Mars, because people they thought, we're not going to make it up there in the north in a city. I said, and she wouldn't be dissuaded. She said, oh, we've got to do this. I'm not sure why. I think there's a better life for us. And it turned out they moved there, and they didn't really see any immediate change. Mm-hmm. But her son, James Cleveland Owens, they called him J.C., and
yes.
that morphed into Jesse. But because she moved her family to Cleveland, that brought Jesse to the attention of this phenomenal coach named Coach Charles Riley. And his ripple effect was he was watching these kids play on the playground in junior high, and he focused on Jesse. And it's like Jesse was very sickly. He was undernourished, and so he wasn't impressive to look at physically. But this coach, I think, my own theory is that he looked into his heart, and I think he could tell that this skinny little kid had the heart of a champion. And so he took it upon himself for the next year, he would bring extra food with him and feed it to Jesse. He would individually coach him. And by the next year, he said, why don't you try out for my track team? And then for the next 10 years, this Charles Riley, he followed Jesse's career. He actually went to be a coach at the high school Jesse went to. Mm-hmm. He also was in touch with him when Jesse went to college. And he would follow him around at different track meets. And there was one famous track meet where Jesse broke 4 records. And then when the Olympics came around,
wow,
you know, he said, I think Jesse's going to go to the Olympics. And he did. And here's what I love about this story.
That is awesome.
You know, and how many times do you see enormous events just distilled down to 2 people? But with Jesse Owens, he went to the 1936 Olympics. Here's the essence of evil, Hitler, and Jesse Owens. And Hitler, of course, everyone knows that he thought people of Jewish descent should just be eliminated and mm-hmm. killed. And what a lot of people don't understand is also the next, had Hitler survived, the next group of people on his hit list would have been people of African descent. He just thought they were inferior, they had no place on earth, and that's how he felt. And so when he saw there was a group of black athletes from America, he thought, well, my picked athletes who were Aryan, they called them Aryan warriors, tall, fair-skinned, blonde-haired, they will show that they're superior. And that's what Hitler's agenda was.
Right.
And Jesse didn't have any agenda, but he just felt that he had this God-given gift, and he had a great love for Pop Riley. And it was kind of like a father figure to him. He said, I'm going to do my best to make the best of my gifts and make make Pop proud. And so, he won 4 gold medals. And the story is that Hitler would go up and, shake the hands of those that received, like, a gold medal, silver medal. And and Jesse Owens won his gold medal. He refused to shake his hand. And that kind of stirred up a lot of bad publicity.
Yes.
And so Jesse kind of humiliated Hitler, which was a good thing. And I thought, well, it goes clear back to the mom. Oh, I kind of have this impression we should move to Cleveland. What a ripple effect.
Isn't that something? And then it goes on to a coach that noticed someone who didn't have any worth at all is an athlete if you looked at the exterior, but he looked at the heart. And I think that so describes our Heavenly Father. He sees champions in many people that the world considers worthless. A lot of people see throwaways, and God sees potential, and I think that's what you're describing there. John, school teachers have an incredible opportunity to touch young lives. You had a teacher in school, Mrs. Edwards, I believe, is that her name?
Yes.
Who greatly influenced your life. How did she do that, and what did it mean to your life?
Wow. Okay, it started, remember earlier I was talking about, you sort of get up on the wrong track. Well, in junior high, I got in with the wrong crowd, and, it got into a lot of fights. It was disruptive. Of course, I didn't, wouldn't crack open a book. And so I got terrible grades. And then And that went on for like a year. And, of course, my mom was really upset. And then I thought, okay, well, my mom, I'm turning this around. And I tried my best. And then it just seemed like at that point I was kind of labeled like anything I would try. It's just like, no, you're a troublemaker. You're going to get your D or F or whatever.
Wow.
And then my mom said,
I can't
said,
believe that.
Yeah. And then my mom said, well, she went to the superintendent. She says, we're taking him to another school. And he says, no, you're not. And then she said, well, I'll take him to a private school if I have to. They said, well, okay, you can take him to this other school then. So, and I didn't know what a great thing that would be at the time, because I at that point I didn't care. But she had a lot of wisdom. She gave me to a new environment. Okay. And one of my teachers there was the English teacher, Mrs. Edwards.
Mm-hmm.
And the story on that is she was very kind. And you know, and she knew how to control a class where, you know, you didn't want to cross her. She let you know if you were in trouble. And so she was a great teacher. And she said one day, we're going to read the yearling. And, you know, in the next few weeks, if we can just take some time to write a report, do a synopsis of each chapter, and then you'll turn in your reports. And so, again, some of these old habits die hard. And so when people were reading, and she said, you can discuss it with your fellow classmates. I was just talking with my friend, and we talked about everything except the yearling. And then one day she said, okay, these reports are due tomorrow. And then I started to panic because I hadn't cracked open the book. And I thought about, I didn't want to break the heart of my mom by getting a bad grade. And I really liked Mrs. Edwards. And I thought, I don't want to disappoint her. She's been very nice to me. So I thought, I'm going to stay up all night and not exactly read the book, but I just sort of like would skim read it, read the first sentence, a couple of middle sentences, chapter, last sentence, and then I wrote a synopsis. And, you know, I just kept doing that through the night. I heard the rooster start to crow.
Wow.
I'm like, okay.
We're up all night.
Yeah. And then I thought, I guess I will go to sleep for a half hour. So I plop into bed. Now my mom's waking me up. You know, it's time for school. And she looks at me, dark circle out of my eyes, and says, oh, you might be sick. Maybe you better stay home. No way. I stayed up all night to write this. Like,
not
no,
after all that
to...
effort.
Right. So I go. Turn it in, and I sort of forgot about it. And then a few days later, she said, you know, you all did a pretty good job, but there's one report that's like the best one I've ever read. And she holds
oh,
up
goodness.
This book, and then it's like, hey, that's not me, but that's the same notebook I wrote it in. And she said, yeah, it's by John Starley Allen, and I'm giving it an A, and it's the best one.
Oh,
it's good job,
goodness.
John. And can you imagine? My heart just melted. I would do anything for her.
Oh,
and,
that's so awesome.
And she sort of took me under her wing, and she would have me like study different famous pieces of writing, like the Gettysburg Address, and I'd write a report on it. And she would have me do things that the other students weren't doing, but she'd say, let's have you do this. It might be a little more advanced. And here, the ripple effect there was I didn't have a scientific mind, but I started doing better in science and in history. And it turned my whole life around where it's like, you know, I don't have to be a troublemaker to get attention.
There
I can be
go.
A good student. And I just credit it. And here's the sort of sad part. It's kind of bittersweet is whenever I tell people the story, I say, yeah, did you go up to Mrs. Edwards and tell her? And it's like, oh, I never did. It never dawned on me. And she's no longer with us. I thought, I wish I would have. But, you know, because she had such a great impact. But I just never did.
Well, that's awesome. And it describes perfectly what I said about teachers. They have that incredible opportunity to touch young lives and really ignite some gifts and talents. And what she did was ignite your already instilled gift of being able to write. And it made you want to write even more, didn't it? And to please somebody who has given you a compliment and to gain more of that encouragement, didn't it?
Yeah, and you know, and so see, that kind of reminds me with Jesse Owens. He had injured his back,
mm-hmm.
and then there's a big track meet in college, and the coach said, well, you injured your back, you shouldn't participate. But then he thought about Pop Riley, who had gone to the track meet with him. It's like Pop, the way he put it, he said, Pop Riley gave me my legs. I don't want to disappoint him. And so he asked the coach, just let me participate in one event. Okay. So he goes and he, you know, breaks the record. And then he says, well, you better rest now. He says, oh, just one more. And the upshot is, because he didn't want to disappoint Pop Riley, he broke 4 world records.
Isn't
and
that
he had such a love.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
The potential was that was in that young man, and if he had not been in the pathway of that coach, maybe
yeah.
he would have never reached that potential. That is
yeah.
so awesome. Well, I've never heard of Philo Farnsworth until I read an account of your book. How did this man who invented television, I didn't know that either, inspire you to include him in your book about kindness and compassion?
There's a couple of things. I mean, I've always been intrigued that there's this individual, Philo Farnsworth, a very unusual name, and you go up to most people, do you ever heard of Philo Farnsworth? No. Who invented TV? Oh, I don't know, maybe RCA, a team of inventors there. It's like, in both cases, it's like, no, Philo Farnsworth was the actual inventor of television, and he never really got full credit. But he was just such a genius. I mean, he invented television. He did like 100 different patents. His mind never stopped working. But the thing with him is at a young age, he loved working on different machines, and he had a love for science. And his father could see this, and his father had a lot of faith in Philo Farnsworth. And it's kind of like we've talked about that, just that right word can be encouraging. Well, Philo Farnsworth was doing something that he didn't really like to do. He was plowing the potato field in the Idaho farm, the family farm, and he's mulling over television, and then he turned the horse and the plow around, and he looked at the work he'd done, and he saw all these lines, these rows he had plowed, and it's a flash of inspiration. He saw them expressed as lines on a glass screen. And then to top it off, prior to that, there was a thing called mechanical television. It consisted of transmitting an image with a spinning disc, and you received it on a spinning disc. And if they weren't perfectly synchronized, it wouldn't have very good resolution.
Yes.
But he thought, you know, that's not going to work. But if it's non-mechanical, with no moving parts, and what we can do, we can shoot electrons, and we can manipulate their path with magnetic power. And all this just came to him, and he ran to his father, and he's like all of 14 years old, and he told
wow.
his father, and his father, who wasn't a scientist, and I'm thinking right there was a crucial moment, because you could have like patted him on and said, oh, that's good, but, you know, don't worry about it, it's way over your head, it'll never work. But he said, you know, he thought to himself, well, I don't understand it, but I really believe in my son. He's proved to this point that he has a real gift for science. So he just said, you know, I really think you have something there. So, you know, keep at it, and he did, because of his father's encouragement. And then the same thing happened when he went to junior high.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted to get enrolled into a science class. And again, the teacher thought, no, you're not qualified. And Philo Farnsworth convinced him, please let me, I just love science. So he said, eventually gave in. And then he started to realize the genius of Philo Farnsworth.
Yeah.
And one day, the teacher walked into this empty classroom. He sees Philo writing all these equations on the blackboard. He said, what's that? He says, what's this idea? Well, tell it to me. And he was kind of reluctant, but he said, okay, I'll tell you. And the same thing, he said, I'm kind of with you. I don't understand the last parts about manipulating the electrons, but I really think you've got something. And with that, that bit of confidence, a few years later, Philo Farnsworth created the first successful television image through non-mechanical television.
You know, I had never heard of him, and that's such a wonderful story, and I think it proves something that I believe many people, John, wait for the limelight and crowds and large ministry opportunities to perform their charitable acts, but I believe ministry and those involving kindness and compassion and charity begin in our own home with our own families and then with our own friends and neighbors. And I'm saying that to say that no opportunity is ever too small or unimportant to convey acts of kindness or to carry out God's will. And there Philo Farnsworth was plowing up that earth, and God used those little lines to impress something on his mind. And it's just what I was saying about my job you know, in your daily job. God shows us so many things in the course of a day, and oftentimes it can be the birth of something even, or the beginning of the birth of something really much bigger that he wants to produce, like a story or a book or a song. Or in Philo Farnsworth's case, it was this thing we watch every day called TV. So I think we can't waste those small opportunities. We always need to look to see what God is showing us as far as the things that can evolve in a story or a song, or the people that he puts in front of us to extend kindness to, like the coach who extended kindness to Jesse Owens. Look what happened to him. These were all small things, small beginnings. And don't you think those small beginnings are the most important, those everyday moments? We can't waste those, can we?
Sure. And it's so fragile. If somebody discourages you or encourages you, it's like you could go maybe either way. And you know what impressed me about Philo Farnsworth is when they realize, okay, you invented television, and he do an interview, they say, well, you know, how about this? You invented television, and mm-hmm. you have these other inventions. And his answer really reveals a lot about him. He said, I never invented anything. What I was a conduit from a higher intelligence, and I believe God revealed these ideas
yes.
to me.
Oh, my goodness, yes.
That's a humble attitude, you know.
That is a very humble attitude. Well, John, finally, there was your own grandfather who was a doctor, and I heard you mention him earlier. How did your grandfather impact your life, and why did you write about him?
Wow, that one is, you know, I knew he was a nice man. He was my grandfather, and I think he might have been like a retired doctor. That's about what I knew. He passed away when I was 9 years old. Mm-hmm. And after he passed away, I started to learn more about him through relatives, through people that knew him. People would come up and say, well, you know, he saved my wife's life, or he turned my life around. And I thought, yeah, this is a great man. And then I heard a story from my mom. I was asking her a little bit about my grandpa, and she said, well, when he first became a doctor, he was just starting his practice, and then his son named Ronald became very sick. And he thought, he had this impression there was something that wanted to take him to a hospital. So he took him to the hospital, and then he was this inexperienced doctor. He met with the more experienced doctor, and the doctor said, well, let's just wait a few days. He'll probably, you know, he's probably just got an infection or something. He'll be fine. And then my grandfather said, I think there's something more to it, and I think it might be a condition that was called pyloric stenosis, which in those days, without antibiotics, it required surgery. Mm-hmm. And then the other doctor said, well, I hope you're wrong, because we can't perform surgery on an infant. Because back at that time, in the area he lived, that was just unheard of, because they thought, well, the infant won't survive the anesthetic. So I said, oh, we can't do that. And my grandfather, L.A. Stevenson, he tried to push his viewpoint, but finally the older doctor prevailed. And the unfortunate thing was, 2 days later, his son Ronald passed away. And then they performed an autopsy. And then the older doctor went to L.A. and says, you know, it might be a comfort to you. You were actually right. Your son did have pyloric stenosis. But, as you know, we couldn't have done a surgery. And my grandfather's reaction is like, well, what's the worst that could have happened? If we did a surgery, he would have died. Well, he died anyway. And he thought, we should have done the surgery. We should have tried, if nothing else. And then he made a vow. He said, I'm going to learn how to perform infant surgeries. And so he went back from Utah. He went to Rochester. And he learned a little bit there. But unfortunately, when the time he was there, there wasn't infant surgery to be performed. But mm-hmm. then a year later, he went to Vienna. And there were 3 infant surgeries. And he observed them. The doctors showed him the techniques, and then he came back to Salt Lake City, and he thought, the next infant that needs surgery, I'm going to do it. And even though it was kind of questioned, but he thought, I'm not going to sit back, you know. And then he proved that all of his infant patients did very well And for the next several years, he was in this area. He was the go-to doctor for a large area. And what was sort of ironic is a few years later, he was an alumnus of Northwestern University Medical School. Mm-hmm. And they had heard of the work he was doing. And they said, we're going to have a banquet and to honor some doctors. We'd like you to come. So he's at the train station, ready to hop on the train and go back to Chicago. And he's paged. And it turns out they tracked him down. They said, you know, there's a family. They're on an airplane from a small town called Santa Quinn, Utah. And they think their infant son has pyloric stenosis. Can you meet them in the hospital? He goes, yes, I can. And I told his wife, it's like, I guess we're not going to Chicago. I have to stay here. And so they just mailed him. They said, well, it's too bad he couldn't come to the banquet, but did up a little certificate for you. But that's how his life was. He just very service-oriented. You know, I was always thinking about other people, how he could help them.
Yes, that's awesome, John. You know, kindness can change an individual, and it can change the world. Why is it so hard to find kindness and compassion in our world today, John? The Bible says in the last days, hearts will wax cold, they'll grow cold. Do you believe we're living in those days, and why?
I definitely do. I mean, I think you've hit on the key is, you know, there is this, you know, the most powerful force is for good, but there's a very powerful force for evil. And yes. I agree with you. We are in these latter days. And
yes,
there's a lot of evil, and people's hearts are waxing cold. And I think that's just, for those that are believers in the Savior, it just means, well, we have to kind of double up our efforts. I think the adversary is definitely doubling up his efforts. And all you have to do is turn on the TV, and you can see all this discord. We had the recent example, someone was just trying to exercise their faith, and mm-hmm. she ended up going to jail just because she believed in the Bible. You know, and I think it's an upside-down world we live in. But
yes,
I think we just wake up every day. It's like, I'm going to, no matter how small it is, I hope by the end of the day I say, well, I did something kind. And I do think even hardened hearts can be melted over time, you know.
Yes, I believe, I'm a great believer in that as Christians we need to be part of the solution in this world instead of part of the problem. And I pray nearly every day, God, please put someone in front of me who needs your comfort and who needs kindness. And he did that just the other day in the course of my day's work. I had to go to a school, and we were setting up some equipment and some different things. And there were kids in a gymnasium. They were kindergartners, and they were playing kickball with these little foam balls. And there was this one little boy, John, and he was sitting on a chair by the door of the gym, and he wouldn't raise his eyes up. It broke my heart. It brought tears to my eyes because he was just paralyzed with this discomfort. Mm. And the coach was standing right next to me, and I said, excuse me, but what is wrong with that little boy? Is he being punished? And he said, no, he is so painfully shy that he cannot play with the other kids. He's new here, and we can't get him to join in with the other kids. And again, that just broke my heart. So I'm a big prayer warrior. I'm an intercessor. And I turned around where nobody could see me, and under my hand I said, oh, Lord Jesus, please, please break the chains from around that child. They could go on with him through the rest of his school day. Send someone to minister to him, help him to come out of his shell. And so the Lord just spoke to my heart. I think kind of like when the Lord spoke to you and said your wife would be okay, the Lord just laid something on my heart. And I said, Coach, do you think that if you sent one child over with a ball just to throw it to the little boy, maybe he could respond to one? Maybe this crowd of kids seems so big to him that he can't walk over there, but if one child walked to him. And sure enough, the coach said, well, I'll try it. And he sent a little girl over, and the little girl dropped a ball in the little boy's lap. And he let it fall to the floor, and then she wouldn't give up. She picked it up, and she threw it to him again. And she said, throw it back to me. So finally he did. Then this little girl, John, she put her arm around this precious little boy, and she said, please come play with us. And it was just like, God, let me see the sweetest, most precious miracle. This little child's paralysis. I mean, it was true, emotional paralysis. It just melted away. And he was on the outside looking in one moment, and then he was part of a group the next. And the coach and I just looked at each other, and I thought, if ever I was supposed to be in a place, it was today, because what if you hadn't spoken to my heart? What if the coach hadn't sent the one child over? What if the little girl hadn't gone over there? What if this child had progressed to years of being shy and feeling an outsider and never broken free from that? So that's why I say I'm a huge believer in we need to look for those ministry opportunities every moment of every day and ask God to let us be his hands and his heart and his voice and all those things he longs to be to all of us. But that's just one of my little stories, and I've been thinking of that as I was thinking of the subject of our wow. show tonight. It transformed me. I nearly cried all day just thinking about that child.
Well, you were at the right place at the right time, and you were the right person to be there. All of that came into play.
Yes, it did. Well, John, I believe you're also a songwriter. We don't have much time, but tell us some about your music. I listened to one of your Christmas songs on YouTube, and it was a very wonderful song, and I believe you wrote a song with Smokey Robinson. Tell us briefly about that.
Oh, and that was a Christmas song, too, and it's called Santa's Out Flying Tonight.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just sort of like a fun Christmas song. It talks about Santa Claus and just the fun parts of Christmas, and then I've written other songs where I talk about Easter, and I wrote a song called He Is Not Here, and it talks about how, you know, they rolled the stone from the tomb and the Savior is risen.
Mm-hmm.
And I've written some country songs, especially when I was in Nashville, a lot of country songs. I mean, I like pretty much all kinds of music.
Mm-hmm.
I like almost all the genres of music, but I've almost, as long as I can remember, I have just heard tunes in my head.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, I love words that I'll just match. In my head, I do a lot of composing in my head, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I'll go and confirm it on a keyboard and then start to orchestrate it and get ideas how to do an arrangement for it. But, I mean, I just like to communicate, be it through music or through writing. I like doing both.
Well, I would like to say you sent me an ebook of A Splash of Kindness, and I've not been able. I work for an organization, and we're very busy right now. But I've read some of it, and I'm telling you, I know when I read the first page of a book if I'm going to like it or not. And with the first page of your book, I'm a teary-eyed person. I mean, my heart is very soft, and I began to cry just reading that first page, and I thought, this is an awesome, awesome book. And you are such a good storyteller, so I want to encourage people who are listening tonight to try to get a copy of A Splash of Kindness in Christmas. What is the other one, Christmas?
Oh. And the others, Christmas Gifts, Christmas Voices.
That one, too. Where can our listeners find out more about you and purchase your books, John?
Well, probably the main outlet would be Amazon, Amazon.com.
Mm-hmm.
But it's
mm-hmm.
also available from Barnes & Noble, either like, you know, the brick-and-mortar stores or the Barnes & Noble website. And in some areas, it's available at Costco.
Mm-hmm.
And it's available at like some independent bookstores, but the easiest thing is, and a lot of libraries are picking it up too. You might actually be able to find it in a library, but
mm-hmm.
I would say Amazon is probably your best bet to find it. And it's just like, I just appreciate what you've said about my book. As I wrote these stories, I was very touched by them. I thought, I just want to write them, and I hope in a way that's appropriate that give people the idea of how I feel about them. I think it's just very inspiring stories.
And I think when you are, when a writer is moved by something, then that moves the reader of those words. I think you have to be moved by something or very, very passionate about what you're writing about for it to move others. Well, I encourage people tonight to go to Amazon and get a copy of A Splash of Kindness. You will be warmed in your heart as you read these true stories about people who exhibited kindness toward others and how it changed lives. In closing tonight, John, can you share with our listeners some final thoughts about the ripple effect of our kindness and compassion and how important it is to create those positive ripples in our world?
Well, you know, I think about the Savior when he was on the cross, and, you know, here's the ultimate example of thinking about others. He said, Father, forgive them. They know not what they do. I'm thinking, boy,
yes.
Talk about being centered towards other people, you know. And
yes.
There's a quote in my book. I really like it. I'd just like to read it to you. It's from Robert Kennedy. And in this appointed address he delivered when South Africa was apartheid-based and there's a lot of segregation. And he just and they wanted to change South Africa, and he said he implored his listeners not to give in to the belief that there's nothing one person, one man or woman can do against the enormous array of the world's ills, against misery and injustice and violence. And they wanted to say each of us can work to change a small portion of events, and then the total of those acts will be written the history of the generation. It's from numberless diverse acts of courage that human history has shaped. Each time a man stands up for an ideal or acts to improve the lot of others or strikes out against injustice, he sends a tiny ripple of hope.
Mm-hmm.
And crossing each other from a million different centers of energy and daring, those ripples build a current which can sweep down the mightiest walls of oppression and resistance.
Wow.
I really like that. And then, of course, Mother Teresa.
I like that, too. Yes, I wanted to ask you to share that quote.
Oh, and she kind of summed it up. She said, I alone cannot change the world, but I can cast a stone across the waters and create many ripples. And I think that kind of sums it up, doesn't it?
I think it does. I think that's a wonderful quote from a wonderful, wonderful lady. Oh, John, I could talk forever to you because I love to talk about kindness and compassion, but we've come to the close of another wonderful program. I've so enjoyed talking with John Starley Allen tonight as he has shared his thoughts about compassion and kindness. Truly, what the world needs now is a splash of kindness and compassion so that a huge ripple effect will be generated across our world. The love of Jesus Christ heals, comforts, and encourages. And as his children, we are to be that expression of his love in our homes, our neighborhoods, and our workplaces. Jesus said the greatest command of all was to love one another. And this should be our greatest endeavor as Christians. Thank you so much, John, for sharing with us tonight. I hope you keep on writing those wonderful books that will cause a very inspirational and healing ripple effect in our world. Be sure and join me again next week when I talk with another inspiring guest who reflects God's gifts. Till then, may God keep you in his tender care. Good night, John, and good
Thanks
night,
so much
listeners.
For having me on your program. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, John. I've so enjoyed it. Good night.
Good night.
LifeQuest Christian Network.
The Woods End Series by Alexander Clare. When Andrea is framed for murder, she discovers that divorce cannot sever the ties from a dangerous cult. Follow Boston Police Detective Jared Scheel as he sets out to solve a murder and kidnapping, only to confront a vast conspiracy competing to produce the last Antichrist of world history. Against the backdrop of drama and intrigue, the Woods End characters come to see that demons are on their last assignments. Bible prophecy unfolds in real time, and Jesus Christ is at the door. Two books, Woods End, and the thrilling sequel, The Year Between the Woods. Download from Kindle, Nook, Screwpulp.com, or purchase the softcover at Amazon. Also by Alexander Clare, a work of nonfiction, discerning spirits, visionary gifts, and practice. Find it all at alexanderclare.com.